Right. So we discussed last week. We're still in this little Gemara on Daf Gimel Amud Aleph. I hope we'll turn the page. Hopefully next week, or if not the week after. As I say, it's a very small couple of lines, but you know, it packs a lot of you know, Chosha Mishpat in those few lines about Kinyanim. So what I want to do today is I want to discuss the principle of Kinyan Suter. So the background is, again, the Gemara here on Daf Gimel Amud Aleph, as we've been discussing, explains that if you assume that the case on the Mishnah, Hashutfim Sharatsu, you know, means that the Shutfim, you know, agreed to split their partnership, to end their partnership. The reason they did that, or the reason that that was necessary to both agree, is because it was a shutfus, you know, she'ena nitenes lechaluka, because the property would not yield after the breakup of the partnership for amos, for each individual. So the Gemara basically says that that's what we're dealing with. So the Gemara says, b'mayukim t'lamas nisin. This is about five lines before the wide lines. Right, same Gemara. Mayukim t'lamas nisin b'she'en b'din chaluka. We're talking about a case of a partnership where the breakup requires both the assent of both parties, because each one loses something qualitatively in the process, because in combination they were owners of a, you know, a property with integrity, more than Dalet Amos, and now they're going to walk away with a property with less than Dalet Amos. So the Gemara says, okay, fine, good. Ibishem din chaluka, ki ratzu mayhabas. So in the end of the day, if that's what the Mishnah is talking about, and it says that if they agree they have to build a wall, there's a missing step. And that step is that agreement per se, as much as it's honorable to, you know, to abide by one's agreement, in some cases in halakha, it's even binding. You know, it's the equivalent of a kinyan. But in this particular case, it sounds like just a statement of intent, or if you want to make it stronger, a promise, right? I see Ari's, you know, here. So we discussed last week, right? What happens, you know, is this a shvua? Is it a neder? Does that like affect the choshen mishpat, et cetera? You know, but it's still a promise, and that doesn't make it, I don't want, you know, people walking away from this Gemara thinking that you should, you know, not honor your commitments. Of course you should. But there are still levels, and the levels are there to protect you, because sometimes you can make a commitment and, you know, it's perfectly understandable that you want to retract. You know, a new situation arises, you weren't completely comfortable. The point is that you didn't commit, you know, with the kind of activity or with the intensity of commitment that is binding. You know, you can have great regard for, you know, being honest, and it's not a question of honesty here. It's a question of no one's saying, you know, that you can lie about what you said. The question is, do we hold you to your verbal commitment? In any society, if you'd hold everybody, this is a tangent, so I'm going to get off in a second, but just to make it clear, it's not that we're being soft on, the halakha is not being soft on commitment, you know, and being honorable. But in any society, if you were to hold everyone to their, you know, initial commitment without any kind of qualification, right, that would sound, you know, very noble and very idealistic, and it would also be a disaster. Not only because it's, you know, a halacha she'ina tzibor yicholim lamod bo, but I would say more than that, you know, you don't want the tzibor to have to be omid bo, because a lot of times people commit to things, you know, without thinking, you know, there are certain pressures, they didn't have time to weigh fully the consequences or to attain a certain level of perspective. So it's not, you know, weakness, and it's not just, you know, nebuch, you know, there aren't enough teeth to your commitment. One should never lie. And there are actions that you can take to intensify your commitment, you know, that make it, you know, unacceptable to retract. And certainly if you make a Kenyan, you can't retract. But the notion that, you know, there is such a thing as a retractable agreement or statement of intent is very reasonable. You know, it's a protection, really, of people. Anyways, so the Gemara says, you know, let them retract. So this is not a fait accompli. Nahadrabu. So the Gemara says, Omer Basim Rabbi Yochanan, Shekona Miyadon. We're talking about a case where they didn't just promise and commit. They actually made a Kinyan Sudar to solidify, you know, that agreement. So the Gemara says, but that's not good enough because that's just words. That's not, you know, subject to a Kinyan. Then the Gemara says, no, b'shakana miyadon beruchos. So what we discussed last week and a little bit the week before that was what is the nature of this halakha of kinyan dvarim bialma? What was the havamina? And what is the conclusion of kinyan beruchos? And what we tried broadly speaking to do, but it took, you know, more than a share and a half to do this. And if we were to thoroughly pursue it, it would take even more than that. What we tried to explain was, let's say that there are two broad perspectives. One is that a kinyan is something very specific, very explicit. It has a certain kind of traditional character to it, mostly change of title. So, anytime we're just, you know, agreeing about something, even if there's some kind of gray area legality, you know, or at least a legal commitment in that agreement, never mind, you know, the fact that it's very, it's entered into with gravity and seriousness and so on, that's still going to come short of the threshold of what Rashi calls a davra nikna, mecher, a matana, even a shibud. What about the rest of Shas, you know, which has all sorts of cases where Kinyan Sudar seems to be strengthening commitments and statements of intent? The answer is every one of those cases has to be re-examined. And you'll find in some way or another that in every one of those cases, we're talking about at least a shibud, some sort of a legal, you know, Kinyan, quasi-Kinyan, which commits you personally or in some cases your property or the property that you will acquire, certainly the property that you already own, right, to be a kind of a lien, right, to cover the Kinyan aspect. So that's what we talk about. Masa Shomachinam Yoska Shoel and Kiblu Alai, and even some cases of, you know, maybe Etain, Hosafas, Tosefes Ksuva, cases like even in our Sugya, another, you know, understanding of the Mishnah, where two people are forced, you know, or two people agree that they're going to actually build the wall. And the agreement includes a shibud, you know, each person kind of committing funds implicitly for that. So that's one approach. And that's the approach that says that Kinyan Beruchos here is an actual Kinyan. It's just misleading a little bit. It doesn't mean Kinyan Beruchos. It means Kinyan Gamor. It means this is the end of the story. There are no more Kinyanim. That's one approach. The other approach is a more complex approach. There's much greater ambiguity, and that is that you can have a chalos kinyan. A kinyan can take hold, can be applicable in situations where there isn't a change of title also. However, you know, it can't just be a promise and certainly not less, like a statement of intent or an assertion, you know, etc. There needs to be something about this that kind of changes the rules, the legal rules, or already kind of, you know, plays with a dynamic, affects a dynamic, which to begin with is subtle. Therefore, beruchos, you know, has the meaning, not that the, you know, this is just one more second, not that this is a sof pasuk, you still need a kinyan to break up the partnership. But if you made an opinion already about the details of how that will be broken up, or if you made a commitment to Vashomachinim to become a Shoel, or if you made a commitment, Nemalai Abba, Nemalai Avicha, Nemalai Gimel Roy Bakar, to change the rules of Dayanus in your specific case, and both of you agree to it, if you decide to say that, you know, Besula is going to get not Masayim, but 2,000, in all those cases, you, not because you're Meshabed Mamon or Karka or Atzmacha to it, but because the personal commitment alone as a, on a legal front in those cases crosses over into being more than Dvarim Biyam. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you hold the first way, there's a real chazaka, then really there's no contrast for the next theme of Ravashi. Halach zeh b'tosh shelo v'hasik. If it's a real kinyan, then Ravashi's statement is merely defining another type of kinyan. But they're right. Both.
100%. So we're going to get to that. Probably not today, maybe the end of today if we're lucky. Meaning this is the question that Rishonim asked, which is, what was Rav Ashi adding to Rava?
Right. Well, no,
you're 100% right. If Rava means what most Rishonim say he means, which is, well, no, we're talking about a case, it was a Kenyan Suda. So look at Tosas for a second. Tosas asks the beginning of the question. Tosas says, Rav Ashi amar kagon shahalach, temelari, ma bar Rav Ashi lahosif, b'chi yitzrik lashminan, dechazaka mo'elis kamo Kenyan, which I think is exactly your question. Meaning, if we just learned that Kenyan Suda works, which it does, because of course it works, do we need this Gemara to teach you that Kenyan Chazaka works? If you want, we can read the answer of Tosis. I'm just not going to analyze that part of it now because I want to leave that for the next, you know, the end of the topic. Tosis answers, V'nirulari, da kamashman, da afagav, da kamar, da kaman, da cheska sabatim, shalo b'fan of tzarech l'meimar, Lechazek ukni, lo lechazek ukni. Hacha kiven she'amru ata tikach ruach tzvonit v'ani ruach dromit v'holach v'hichsik kolechad b'shalo zeh shalom b'fnei zeh nasa kemi shekanu miyadam beruchos apa b'shalo amru zeh lo zeh lechazek ukni. Tosa says, I think that the chiddush of Rav Ashi has nothing to do with anything in Rava. Right, it has to do with the details of applying Kenyan Chazaka to this particular case. And I'm going to get back to discuss with that, you know, what the implications of that are. But what Tosa says technically is that normally you require, in order to achieve a Kenyan Chazaka shelo bifnei habaylim, you need him to say, not only to agree that we're going to change, you know, we're going to, you know, we're going to authorize the sale. If we agree to authorize the sale, and then he does a kinyan chazaka b'fanav, and he doesn't, you know, dispute the meaning of it, then that's fine. But if he's not there, then we need to hear from him, the magic words lechazek ukni. But in this particular case, we don't need that. Why? I think it has to do with the name. Tosas doesn't tell us. Other Rishonim, like the Rajba and others, say it has to do with the difference between initiating a kinyan from scratch and breaking up a shutfus, you know, kind of, you know, being bavarer, you know, the chalakim that are already shayach to each individual. It has to do a lot with the shutfus question that we have, you know, talked about a little bit, but we're going to talk about more in Yirtz Hashem next week when we finish this up. Okay? But your question is totally right. Now, but I think the good ha'ara that you're making, I may have said this in weeks past also. I think I did, but it's worth repeating, especially in light of your question, is according to the Rambam, right, this question, and Rabbeinu Gershom, and those who learn Dekanalei Baruchos in this more subtle way, call it more ambitious way, namely what they're saying is, you didn't make a kinyan gamur and split up the property now. You just made a kinyan to agree to split up the property. And because you were mefaret, you know, it wasn't just a, you know, oh, we'll split up the property. It was, you get the east side, I get the west side, you know, et cetera. That's what makes it a kinyan and not just devarim, even though it isn't a change of title. And even though you're still mechusar kinyan, you'll still have to make a kinyan on the actual, you know, switch. So if you hold like that, like the Rambam, Rekabin, and Gershom, I think that that's how they read the Gemara. So then Rav Ashi is totally understandable. Rav Ashi says, no, that's not what's going on here. That wouldn't work. Who's, you know, because it's controversial. I mean, there's nothing controversial on the surface about a regular Kinyan Sudar taking place now, splitting the property, which is what you were asking. So then what does Rav Ashi have to argue with? But if Rava is saying, you know, this idea of, you know, there's a Kinyan Gomor, there's a Kinyan Devarim, and then there's something in between, you know, something in the pattern of, which is considered a Kinyan, and that it's, you know, Kinyan Baruchos. So for Avashi to say, no, I don't buy that. I don't think that that works, Kinyan Baruchos, not enough. What do you need? You need a real Chazaka, or you need a real Kinyan Sudar, but not Baruchos. Right. So I agree with you on that. But so that's why Bali Tosis and other Rishonim were searching for another Chiddush of Rav Ashi. We don't need Rav Ashi to tell us that Chazaka works on Kinyan. That works on Karka. Okay? But anyways, but I wanted to today, before I get back to that, if I can get back to that, that would be amazing. But what I want to do is spend a little bit of time going, you know, just examining something which a bunch of you have brought up, you know, in, since we started this topic, and that is about Kinyan Sudar more specifically. So the contention, I'll tell you how it fits in here, and then I'll just spend a little time elaborating. The contention is that this whole discussion about having a Kinyan that, you know, kind of strengthens your intention and kind of, you know, reflects, you know, that the level of commitment, you know, is a serious and intense one, not just a kind of a passing or, you know, more frivolous, you know, assertion or even agreement, that is accomplished in the world of Kinyanim by Kinyan Sudar more than anything else. Now, what I'm trying to say is the Havamina, that there could have been a Kinyan Sudar that you will just disband a partnership, even though there's no, you know, even though it is kind of Devarim, and what the Rambam describes in Parakeh, Halacha Yud Aleph and Yud Beis, as, you know, people mistakenly assuming that you can pile on, you know, Kinyan Sudars and that will help you, when in his opinion, sometimes it doesn't help, and sometimes it's unnecessary and you just don't need it. Which is basically his discussion of, you know, Kinyan Devarim. So this idea, and we'll go further, and the Rambam's idea that there could be a Kinyan Baruchos, which is something in between, and the fact that the Gemaras that, you know, seem to be, you know, projecting cases which are kind of on this borderline, Kibla Alai, Masa Shomarchinam, Tosefes Ksuba, Etain, all those Gemara. It's not a coincidence that all those Gemaras practically are all about Kinyan Sudar. In the case of Gittin and Etain, a little bit about Shtar too, which we'll get back to. But my point is, I don't think, you know, that any, not the Havamina and not Lamaskana, according to quite a few Rishonim who think that there is this kind of in-between status, which is still Kinyan, that typically it will be Kinyan Sudar Dafka makes a great deal of sense. Okay, so I want to spend a few minutes talking about why that is, because this is this Gemara here, Kinyan and Kinyan Dvarim, very, very important. I say it's the only place in Shas where this formulation appears. So let's start from the beginning. Firstly, we note that the Rambam in Parakeh of Hilchos Mechira, I think I mentioned this at the end of last week, but if we can look at that just for a moment, Parakeh Halacha Hey, that the Rambam says, Hakarkos v'havadim v'habehema, this is in the previous sheet, not the most recent Mar Makomos, but the one before that, and it's on, I'm not sure what page it is for you, I'm guessing page 6 for yours. So Parakeh Halacha Hey. The Rambam says, HaKarkos, Ba'avadim, Ba'abehema, the Shar Kala Metaltalin, kol echad mehem nikna b'chalipe. Okay? So first he starts off by telling you that chalipin is a very expansive kinyan, namely that it applies, you know, both the karka, you know, and to metaltalin. Now, what's interesting about that is the next line. I'll explain what I mean in a minute. He says, "V'hu hanikra kinyan." Okay. So there are two things that the Rambam tells us. It could be I'm reading into it more than he intended, or, you know, or more than is there. Sometimes he doesn't have to intend it for it to be there. But what I think is that there's no, you know, the assumption we generally make is that there are no coincidences in the Rambam. So I think what he's saying, consciously or unconsciously, is the following yesod. First of all, in Shas, the word kinyan means sudar, right? Just like our Gemara, v'husha konamiyana, right? Or the Gemara in Bat Shomachinam in Shomachinam, v'husha konamiyana, or the Gemara in Sanhedrin that we discussed last week, ein l'achar kinyan, you know, klum. So how did sudar, like, become, you know, the default, you know, meaning of kinyan? That's a very remarkable thing. You know, it's like a domain name, you know, that, you know, is very coveted. Like, who wouldn't want to be the Kinyan? Kinyan, Stam Kinyan means, so the Rambam is telling you this, that Vuhua Nikra Kinyan, Sudar is called Kinyan, and that he's just telling you something which is a fact in Shas. Now, does it matter? Is it about, if it's about ubiquity, meaning how often, how frequently employed this kinyan is, and maybe not. So again, I suspect, you know, that this is very significant, and that's why the Rambam is repeating it. Not just to tell you, by the way, if you want to know how to read Shas properly, you know, this is an important clue. I think the principle here is that kinyan sudra is different, and its ubiquity has to do with that difference. And the second point that reinforces that is the fact that it applies bein b'metaltel and bein b'karkos. Most kinyanim, almost all kinyanim, apply either to karka or to metaltel. Right? The one seemingly prominent exception, which is kesef, also doesn't really apply, you know, equally to karka and metaltel, at least according to some. Right, the language that we use, in, if you want to acquire something through money, the language that we use when it comes to karka is kesef. Karka is nikneis b'kesef, b'shtar, u'b'chazaka. But the language that the Gemara uses when it talks about acquiring through money, metaltalin, is ma'os. Gemara has a debate in Perek Hazav whether ma'os konos or ma'os einan konos. And the makar, the source, you know, for kinyan kesef bekarka is, you know, kadshim and so on. The Gemara brings a makar, you know, for it. There is no makar for ma'os, which is why there can be a machlokas or Yochanan Reish Lakish. And the Ramban has a daya where he says, well, it's a svara. Maybe you don't need a makar. Either ocha bekesef yashbereini or just maybe it's a svara. Very strange, you know. But again, this seems to differentiate the role of kesef in the two. Again, I don't want to discuss kesef and mos extensively here, but you got the idea. So the idea may be that kesef in karka is more of a symbolic kinyan, right? It's with a pruta. Of course, you have to pay the rest of the money, otherwise there's no smichus das, there's no agreement about the transaction. But the rest of the money, and even this kifas milva of the rest of the money, is not the, you know, it's not part of the Maisa Kinyan, right? But when it comes to metaltalin, which is mos, which is a svara, there's no svara that you could buy a $1 million watch with a dollar, right? But, you know, to buy a $1 million watch with $1 million, or if the person wants to be mochel or skifas milva, but you know, we really consider the kinyan itself to be the $1 million, that makes sense. So what am I trying to say? That even where you have a seeming overlap, right, it's misleading. In the world of the halacha, karka and metaltalin, I wouldn't say they don't overlap in anything, but they're very different. They're like, you know, the default assumption is that karka and metaltalin are distinctive. And that's expressed in kinyana, right? I mean, So isn't it curious, interesting that kinyan sudar applies to both, and that the Rambam, right, in formulating that, formulates that in the halacha that introduces that the word kinyan, you know, stam means kinyan sudar. Now, of course, there's a much more practical explanation. You could say, you know, karkosa vadeva behemah shar kol metaltan, they're all bechalipin, who nikra kinyan, just, you know, because in Shas, the word kinyan means sudar, and it's applied to both. I'm sure that that's also true, but I'm just saying the way that he writes it sounds to me like he's saying more. What he's saying is, kinyan sudar is a ubiquitous, universal kinyan because it's a different kind of a kinyan. What do I mean by it's a different kind of a kinyan? Well, physically, you know, the whole kinyan sudar is peculiar, right? Most kinyanim either are obvious exchanges, like kesef or mos, okay, mos more than kesef, according to what I just said, right? Or there's some sort of a physical symbol, you know, about what it is that's happening. Meshicha, you're moshech, the object, into your rishus, hagba, chazaka is a different way of haras bailus, which that's one of the things that we're going to talk about, you know, in the last part of this topic, which again, we'll either get to the end of today or next week. Yirat Hashem. So, different, you know, kinyanim underscore different aspects of this change of ownership and title of bringing an object into rishus, of becoming, you know, owner, etc. So, but sudar is really peculiar. There's no maisa b'guf adavar at all. I'm acquiring your karka or your watch, you know, and I'm doing what? I'm giving you, handing you a pen, a handkerchief. And, you know, there is something called chalipe shava b'shava, you know, a kind of a barter idea. My chamor for your para. That you could see as barter, which is still different, by the way, than value. I don't think it's not kesef exactly. It's barter, which is why the things don't have to align completely. But in the end of the day, it's hard. Is that really what's going on in sudar? Just, you know, in an exaggerated way? Doesn't seem exactly so. Which might be another reason to look at barter. But, So what I think what the Rambam is really saying is this isn't a Maisa B'Guf HaDavar, and therefore, if it was a Maisa B'Guf HaDavar, how you do that in a symbolic and significant way for Karka and for Metaltalin is different. The halacha mostly wants to make it different. But when it comes to Sudar, the real focus is on intensifying, this is what Chaim said, but it has really strong roots, as we'll see in Rishonim, intensifying the level of your commitment. In other words, that what you're doing, this is kind of a way of concretizing or objectifying, you know, the fact that you agree. You do it in a certain way, but it's the intention to go through. It's the commitment, you know, to go through with this change. You know, that is the davar, mostly hakona. Let me take a step back and explain. In many kinyanim, you need a level of rotzon and das, call it ratzon for the moment, or an agreement, assent. Certainly, if you were to do a kinyan b'derech misasek, like you did a kinyan and you didn't even know you were doing it, that wouldn't count. Right? Although, unless it was a das acharis makna and he intended it, that's a discussion of the Ravid in Cheskes Sabbatim, Dachin Gimel, but that aside, typically you need a, you know, the Gemara, interesting actually, very interesting discussions of the Gemara of the Rishonim in the beginning of Bava Metzia, and then again later on, like, you know, Daf Tes and Daf Yud, and Aleph. Like, let's say you do a Kenyan, and you have Kavana Le Kenyan, but you mistakenly think that, you know, that what is not a Kenyan is a Kenyan, right? So you did the Maisa Kenyan, but you didn't know it was, you thought something else was the Maisa Kenyan, and you did it the Kavana. In other words, do you just need Kavana for the Chalos HaKenyan, or do you need Kavana specifically for the Maisa HaKenyan? So that's an interesting, that's an interesting question in Ilus Kenyanim. I don't want to get bogged down with that at the moment, although it's a very interesting issue. The bigger point I'm trying to make is that there is a required Ratzon. Usually you have to intend for your Maisa Kenyan to be effective. However, in the balance of things, you know, the heavy lifting in most Kenyanim is done by the Maisa Kenyan, as long as there's no Misasek and everybody understands what they're doing, why they're doing it, etc. However, Kenyan Sudar, perhaps, at least according to the Rambam, as we'll discuss, is more than that. The amount of Maisa Kenyan that you're doing, or what constitutes a Maisa Kenyan, is so severely compromised because there's no Maisa Beguf Adavar. And it might even be more than that. We'll soon see. The Gemara Nedarim, Daf Mem Ches, discusses whether you even get to keep the handkerchief if you want, or the pen, or do I get it back automatically? So the point is, the heavy lifting isn't done on the Maisa. The Maisa has little to do with what is being exchanged, because what is being exchanged is not part of the, it's just agreed upon. It's not even there. You're not doing a Kenyan, you know, Beguf HaDavar. It's not Kesef. Well, we'll see. It doesn't look like Kesef, not for the Rambam anyway. So what is it? So the answer may very well be, this is a way of objectifying or concretizing the agreement itself. And it's the Das that does the heavy lifting here. If that's the case, and that's one of the things we're going to spend a few minutes examining, so then we could totally understand why it's the Kenyan. Because in the end of the day, of course, you Maisa Kenyan, and that's very important. But it's all a way of affecting changes that you agree to. So the Kenyan is when the focus is on, you know, the Haskama, the Iskaibus, the Dasam Iskaib itself. And it's perfectly understandable why, you know, it applies universally to Karka and to Metalton, even though typically the way you acquire one is not the way you acquire the other, because it has nothing to do with what you're acquiring. It's all about strengthening the agreement such that this really, really works. By the way, this will explain a little bit why it is that even though Kenyan Sudar applies Bein Bekarka Bein Metaltelin, it doesn't appear on the list of either. Right, I mentioned before that Mishnah Kedushim says that Karka is nicknames Bekesef Bishtar Bechazaka. No Sudar. And the Mishnayos in Bava Basra, which talk about Kenyanim of Metaltelin, they don't mention Kenyan Sudar. But the Rishonim already, or Zerua and others, you know, make this comment. And some of them give technical reasons. I like the idea that the reason that they're omitted from all lists is not because it's just they're obvious. It's because it's not, when you apply Kenyan Sudar to Karka, it's not Betores Kenyan Karka. And when you apply Kenyan Sudar to Metalglin, it's not Betores Kenyan Metalglin. If it was, maybe they wouldn't work for both. Maybe there's some additional rule that you can't have for both. Although that's questionable. They have to look at other cases too, other issues too. Might be true. But what I'm trying to suggest is that the derech or the mode, because there's no maisa kinyan begufa davar anikna, right? And there's no kind of real exchange either. And it's all about the agreement between the parties becoming legalized. So then it's not a kinyan karka and it's not a kinyan metaltolin. So it doesn't belong in either list. It's by definition stam kinyan, which is applicable to both. So with this, what I'm trying to explain, I'm just going to spend a few minutes bringing some more evidence that this is true. I think this explains, you know, what we're encountering, you know, in this broader topic, which is if there was going to be any kinyan that was going to work for dvarim, to take a promise or even less than that, an assertion, well, let's say more than that, a promise, right? Or a commitment or a legal commitment, right? And turn it into something that is irrevocable, right? There's no chazara. If any kinyan was going to be able to do that, if there's going to be a kinyan on dvarim, it's going to be kinyan sudar. Because technically, for two reasons technically, and for a third reason fundamentally, you know, technically, because it's the universal kinyan, it can work on anything. That's one. Two, it doesn't really ever attach itself to the davar anikna, right? So the fact that there's only dvarim and there's nothing to attach to is not a chisaro. But the bigger idea is that, what are we talking about? We're talking about being able to make a commitment that passes the threshold from just being a statement of intent or assertion or even a promise into being like what's called a legal commitment. If anything can do that, it's kinyan sudar. And maybe if anything can do it, in fact, like Kona Baruchos, maybe that's kinyan sudar. So that's why I think both in the Hava Mina and in these other Gemaras, and especially if there ends up being some sort of an ambiguity in these, kinyan sudar is perfectly situated, you know, in the hierarchy of kinyanim, right, to be able to accomplish, you know, these very, very, you know, subtle goals. Okay, everybody with me so far? Okay, great. Any questions before I go into a couple of rayas just quickly?
I just want to ask, I hope it's a short question. The question's going to be short. I don't know about the response. But is it
chazaka that we're in trouble?
Does Misha Purah play a role in this? Let's say you don't have Kona Baruchos. You just had Kona Miado. The one says Nahadri Bahu. It seems to be very cavalier that you could just change your mind.
Misha Purah is if you pay money.
How about a Kenyan Chalipin?
Sorry?
How about if you made a Kenyan Chalipin? Can you back out?
We're talking about a Kenyan Chalipin.
Okay, so the Gemara says Kona Miado. And the Gemara says Nahadri Bahu. Let him back out. So the Gemara says no, because you're Kona Baruchos. So however you want to interpret that. But it seems to be that if it was not Kona Baruchos, you could just back out, right?
Right, because there's no, the Kenyan doesn't chal on anything.
So there's no Misha Purah in a situation like that?
No. Misha Purah is a situation where you give somebody, even if you hold Mos, say on Konos, but if you give somebody money, you paid for it already, right? So then there's something called a Misha Purah. But that's something that is kinyanable to begin with. Let's say I want to buy your watch, right? And let's say Mos Einan Konos.
Right.
So I give you $100, but Mos Einan Konos, so the kinyan isn't chal yet. So can I back out? So that's your makabel and Misha Purah. But your watch, you want to sell your watch. You want to sell your watch now. Right? And you tried to do it with the money, but you know, you weren't trying to make a commitment that you will sell your watch. You were trying to sell your watch.
Right.
That's totally different. Misha Purah is if you exchange money, but the money isn't Kona. But you, what you want to accomplish with the money, what you want to accomplish right now, you want to go ahead with the Kenyan.
Correct.
We're not talking about that here. We're talking about a partnership that existed. There's no money. It has nothing to do with money.
But they made, he was Kona Miyado to dissolve the partnership.
Right. So they're saying that's just words. What is that?
Okay.
So, no Mishapara. Okay. There's no money.
Thank you.
Okay. Right?
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Any other questions?
Yes. What is the Kenyan Haisha nicknames?
Haisha, we'll get to it in a minute, but what about it?
What type of Kenyan is that?
Well, the Gemara says, as you know, I mean, that's a change in the legal relationship between husband and wife. It's not an acquisition, at least we don't think so. Although there are some Lashonos and Rishonim that way. But typically we, you know, not because we want to be politically correct, but because we want to be halachically accurate. So we don't consider it to be primarily an acquisition. But Kinyanim changed the legal relationship between parties. So Haisha nicknays begimel drachim, and remember the Gemara says kicha kicha, the kesef part is, you know, kesef b'shtar b'biya. The kicha, the, you know, the kesef part is kicha kicha misteyafro. So it's like, you know, kinyan kesef. But what happens is not that he buys her; it's that they agree through this mode of kinyan, right, that they become bonded. That they, you know, that their legal relationship changes, and that includes, you know, not mutual identical, because the Torah also believes in what I call spiritual specialization. So, we do think that roles are different, and that's also reflected even in the Kinyan itself. I mean, it's Isha Niknes, he's the Kone, she's the Makne. So, you know, that's all part of it. But that either way, it's a consensual kinyan in which both of their status changes, especially hers, and both of them, you know, have legal rights and obligations, you know, vis-a-vis each other. That's not dvarim. You have to understand what dvarim means. Dvarim is mostly a statement of intention. I'm going to go ahead and do this. But it's not doing it. When I give a woman, when I go to a wedding and I'm Mekadesh and Isha, I shouldn't say you go to a wedding and Mekadesh and Isha. If you're a chassan and you're being Mekadesh, you're a kala, right? That is the Kenyan. That's not Tvarim. I mean, there are words that go with it. You know, Kedas Moshe Yisrael. But that is the Kenyan.
How do we define that Kenyan?
What do you mean?
It's the Kenyan Sudar? No.
No, 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 no. In fact, I'll read you the Gemara in a minute, but it's on the sheets here. Kenyan Sudar doesn't work in Kedushin. We'll see why in a minute. But it doesn't work. It's one of the, you know, the universal Kenyan doesn't work here. The question is, Doraisa, Drabanan, why doesn't it work? It requires a, you know, not just a kinyan of das, but it's only kesef shtar ubiya. But the Gemara discusses why not suda. We're going to get to that Gemara in just a minute. All right. So, what's that?
Ishikar.
Oh, thank you. Okay. Any other questions before we move on? Okay, good. So what they made the, you know, the Gemara that really acutely captures the, you know, at least initially, what is unique about Kinyan Sudar, and it's very, you know, critical in understanding it, is the Gemara, famous Gemara in Bava Metzia. The Gemara in Bava Metzia, Mem Zayin Amud Aleph. So turn to that for a minute. In the new Mara Makomos, that would be, for me, it's on the bottom of page 2, so I'm guessing for you it's on page 3.
Page 2, line 26.
Page what?
Page 2, line 26. Yeah.
226 and yours?
Line 26.
Okay. So this is Talmud Babli, Masechet Bava Metzia, Daf Mem Zayin Amud Aleph. So the Gemara says, "Bamekonin." Right? What is used in the kinyan? Okay, how do you do this kinyan, or with what are you konat? You know, who basically owns the object, the pen, the handkerchief, whatever it is? You know, whose is it? What happens to it? So the Gemara says, "Rav Amar b'kelev shel konat." Rav said that it belongs to the kone. I mean, the person who is acquiring, what's he acquiring here? A watch, a field? Whatever it is that he's acquiring, it's his sudar, it's his pen, it's his now, right? That's being used. It's kelev of the kone. Reuven is acquiring a sada from Shimon. The pen or the sudar belongs to Reuven. That's what you're using. Reuven is giving Shimon a sudar, right? And is, you know, that's the way that he is acquiring the field or the watch or whatever it is from him. Okay, everybody with me? B'me konim ravam b'kevel shel konim. Now, I'm just going to rush to the Gemara for a minute, and then I'm going to go back to it. Okay, that's a little bit of a gulp, you know. Because it's preferable or it's good for the kona that the makna should be kona. It's a strange language, so we're going to get back to it. Okay, but you know, kihech in order gets longer. The ligmar veliknile. Right, the kona is happy that the makna should receive something so that the makna will willingly, seriously, right, transfer title to what Reuven the kona is interested in. It's a very verbose statement. The reason I say it's verbose is and a little unexpected, is because in a typical kinyan, right, you have a kone and a makne. Reuven is buying Shimon's watch or his field. Who should be giving the object, the kone or the makne? The kone. It's a quid pro quo, right? I mean, I want to get his field. The least I can do is give him a pen or a handkerchief. Normally, but I'll put it this way. Let me say it this way. In the traditional, in all other kinyanim, right? You know, if you have to, you know, hand something over, the kona hands something over so that the makna will hand over what he's handing over. You don't need such a drasha. You don't need such a long verbose statement, right? Why don't you just say it's an exchange? It's kelev shel kone, because in order for him to acquire, he has to give quid pro quo. So that's strange. We're going to get back to that in a minute. Levi Amar, this is initially stranger, the kelev shel makna. Levi said, no, it's not the kelev shel kona, it's the kelev of the makna. Huh? So that isn't problematic yet from the language. That's problematic from the din. Meaning, what are we saying? Shimon is giving up his field and Shimon has to give Reuven a pen or a sudar in addition? Reuven receives a pen from Shimon, and then he receives this field? That doesn't seem... I don't know whether the other way is fair either, but it just seems peculiar. That's not typically what happens in a kinyan. So while Rav's thought is understandable, although his language is cumbersome, and we're going to explain it in just a minute, Levi's psak is peculiar. Yeah. Question?
Just interesting, from the original pasuk in Rus, The pasuk is so not descriptive. It sounds like either person could take the Nile, the Nasan L'Re'ehu.
Well, the Gemara is going to say in a minute that they do argue on that ambiguity. You're right, that there's an ambiguity in the pasuk and Rus, like who gave to who. So the Gemara does say, the Gemara doesn't say what you're saying. You're saying something more ambitious. You're saying it sounds like either one could do whatever he wants.
Because it's ambiguity. Right.
By the way, I think that's an interesting idea. And in a way, you have an echo of that in some Rishonim, which I'll explain in just a second. But the Gemara is not going that far. But the Gemara does agree that there's ambiguity and that that ambiguity is the basis for there being a possible machlokas. We'll see in a moment. So anyways, Amalei Rav Huna, where am I here? So Levi Amar Kehil Shamak. So just hold on, you'll see that in a minute in the Gemara. And I'll explain what I meant about one shita. Levi Amar Kehil Shamak. He's whetting our appetite. It's like, we'll explain it, don't worry. Everybody's outraged, you know. Poor Makne. He's giving up his field and you want him to give up his favorite pen or handkerchief too? Right, we'll explain it, don't worry. Amalei Rav Huna b'dasak midisakarta l'rabba, right? Ulelevi dama kelo shomakna hakakani ara agav glima? I guess he wasn't so patient. He wasn't willing to wait, so he jumped right in with his outrage. He said, what? This is a kinyan agav? And you're being kona the karka agav the metaltalin? Glima means a shirt. So you're kona the karka agav a shirt? What does he mean? There's a kinyan called kinyan agav, which means that if you want to, in the process of acquiring karka, you also want to bundle agav, you want a kinyan agav, you know, as you're, while you're at it, you want to bundle also to sell some piece of metalkalin, you can do that. The Gemara in Kiddushin and Daf Chav Zayin discusses whether it has to be, whether it's only tzivurin or not tzivurin. I think we just came up a little bit somewhere a couple of weeks ago, I think. Okay. So, I mean, tzivurin means does the object have to be on the karka or not? So the Gemara here says, what is this? A reverse agav? Because agav is your makne a karka. You can also be makne agav metaltalin on the karka, whether it physically has to be on the ark on the karka tzivurin or not. That's, you know, that's a separate question in the Gemara, and then the halacha with leich hazeik akni, without leich hazeik akni is a controversial Rambam and exos and a whole discussion. Fine, but the main point here is the Gemara basically is what's happening in this Gemara. The Gemara is scrambling around, like the Gemara is like, you know, whoa. The Levi thinks Kalev Shamakna, that's so atypical. The closest thing we can compare it to is what? A Kenyan called Kenyan Agav. So, except that in Kenyan Agav, it goes the opposite way. You're Makna the Karka and you're Makna the Metaltal, and on top of it. Here, what are you doing? You're giving the guy a pen or a handkerchief, and you want his Karka to be Nikna Agav. The metaltalin, that's not agav. That's what he asked. So one more time. Amalei Rav Huna midisakarta l'rabba ulevi damar b'kelev shomakna. Levi, you said kelev shomakna hakakani ara agav glima? There's a question mark. You can be makne a karka on top of a shirt, a piece of metaltalin? Im kain, if that's the case, what you're saying is that metaltalin, otherwise known as nechasim she'ein lamachrayos, because, you know, metaltalin can be destroyed, metaltalin can be hidden, you can't, you know, it doesn't have, you know, automatic shibudim, the nickname im nechasim she'ein lamachrayos, right? Meaning, that's not agav, that's the opposite of agav. That's a reverse agav. Vanan ipchatnan. We know the opposite. Nechasim shein la makrayas. niknanim b'chasim sheyesh lehem akrayas. Amalei, so the Gemara says, I have a lady hacha, have a mapik le'apach, pulsa denura. This is a pretty harsh, you know, response. But he said to him, you know, you're asking me this kind of question, is very insulting to Levi. You know, if he were here, he would issue a pulsa denura. Pulsa denura is a very serious, you know, klala, right? So the Gemara says, misavras, yeah, explain to him, glima maknale. You think that this is a reverse agav, and the idea of chalipin is that he's being makna, the karka, agav, the metaltalin. That's not what's happening. The real way that Levi's kinyan is working has nothing to do with agav, not reverse agav. The way it works is, I'm so happy, right, that you're giving me this gift, right? I'm sorry that you're receiving my gift. I said it wrong. I'm so happy that you're receiving my gift and acknowledging my largesse, that joy, right, is connected to the hakna of the karka. Okay, that's what this means. Just one more second. And then the Gemara says, I'll get back to that in a second because that isn't so simple. The Gemara says, Kitanai. Actually, it's a machlokas atanaim. And the machlokas is about the pasuk in Rus that you brought up before. Vizos lefanim b'Yisrael. Right? This is the way it used to be in Kal Yisrael. This is how they used to conduct themselves in Kinyanim. Ala ge'ula v'ala t'mura l'kayim kol davar shalaf yishnalo v'nasan l're'eyu. A person would take off his shoe and give it to his friend. Right? Ge'ula z'mechira v'chein omer lo yigael t'mura z'chlipin v'chein omer lo yachlifen v'lo yamiroso l'kayim kol davar shalaf yishnalo v'nasan l're'eyu mi nasan l'mi. Who gave who? Right? That's exactly what you were bringing up, Dr. Maybrook, before. It doesn't say Boaz nasan l'goel. Rabbi Yonamar goel nasan l'boaz. Right? It's just very, very, you know, unclear. So that is the reason that there can be, you know, such a machlokas. Okay, but let's get back to both Rav and Levi. So what I'm trying to suggest is that both Rav and Levi have a problem. Rav's shita, we paskin like Rav, by the way, a Caleb Shokona. But the language is very verbose. Why not just say it's obvious? However this thing works, at least let it be a quid pro quo. Let it be a two-sided Kenyan. I give, I get. I get, I give, you know. But why such a long speech? Yeah, I'm happy for him to receive so that he'll be serious to be makna to me in return. Just say, quid quo quo. As for Levi, the Gemara was so spooked, you know, by Levi that it practically triggered a pulsa denura. Right? They thought it was reverse agav. So when the Gemara says in the end, it's hahi ana. There are two ways you can go with that. One is to say, we went from the, you know, from the fire to the whatever, I don't know the right expression. But we thought we were in big trouble with Levi. We couldn't understand at all what he was saying. Right? And it turns out that it's a simple thing. It's a kinyan of Hana. How can it be Hana if it's all one-sided? The answer is sometimes Kabbalah's Hana. The Kabbalah's Matana gives the Nosein, you know, the Hana, sufficient Hana, that's like Kesef. But there's one big, and that's the simple reading of the Gemara. So that Levi, the problem with that is, does it fit in to the norms of the Halacha and Kol Torah Kula? So the Ritva, just one more second, and then I'll take the question. The Ritva Alatar, there are actually two problems. Look, let's first look at the Tosis. Everybody on page 3? Tosis, Bab Metzia, Mem Zayin, Amid Aleph, Bekelev Shalmakna. Tosis says, Dafka Bekelev Shalmakna, Velo Bekelev Shalkona. Dehamikra Yalif Lekaman. We learn that from Shalafish Nalo, two ways to read the Pasuk. So obviously, Levi meant only Kelet Shamakna. Be Levi Sovar Ema Ben Nikna Bechalipin, Bechem Peira in the time of the Boy Hanas, Kabbalah Stavar Khashuv, Dimidinal. Okay, fine. Tosa says only in this direction. But the problem is, if you take the Gemara Kipshuto, what is the Hana? The Hana is like, it's not really Kelet Shel. It's Kelet Shel Makna, because it creates Hana, right, to the Makna. So it's really an Asina from the Kona. In other words, if the Hahi Hana works, so you're telling me an Asina of the actual Sudar, you know, would it work better? That's question number one. Question number two. The Gemara has this idea of Hahi Ana, you know, that if somebody deigns to accept my gift, you know, that makes me, you know, it gives me Hana. Okay? The Gemara has that notion in Kiddushin and of Zion. The Gemara says that in some cases that'll work for Kiddushin, but the Gemara says only in Adam Chashuv. If somebody's not, if the recipient is not Adam Chashuv, then it works. In other words, if I present, I guess one of you, or the Queen of England, or the President of the United States, or whoever it is, or somebody chashuv, big tamachachon, whatever it is, I give somebody a gift, right? And I'm just tickled that they accepted it. Their acceptance of my gift, because they're an adam chashuv, is meaningful to me, right? But that's only if it's an Adam Chashuv. Rav and Levi aren't arguing about Adam Chashuv, they're talking about anybody. So look at the Ritva for a minute. It just says, Bahi anod kamakabo minei gomer maknile, the hikshu betosis imkein havelon the memer, the dafka kishakona Adam Chashuv. Our Tosis doesn't read this, but this Ritva had other access. He said, this should only work for an Adam Chashuv. Can a minimum of our comedy kiddushin? I don't know why it says Hey and Baser. It should really say Zion and Aleph. Gabi Kiddusha Isha, Hey Lachmana, right? Give $100. Meaning the woman says to her Shliach, give the man $100. Va'kadesh Anilach, and I will be Mekudeshes to him. So the halach is Mekudeshes. Now the Gemara says, how could that be? It says, ki yikach ish isha. This looks like the opposite, ki tikach, or ki tilakach. Says the Gemara, yukimna b'adam kashuv. So our Gemara here isn't about adam kashuv. How's this working? V'od, im kein amai shayni lach, b'chalipin ben kli o peros, same question Tosis asked. There are all sorts of rules when it comes to chalipin. Who really cares? You know, as long as there is hana from the acceptance of what it is. Ba'od, dimkein levi kol shekein shekonu b'kelo shekonu. Right? If the reason is that levi, is that according to levi, the makne is nene from the kone receiving his present, then kol shekein he'll be nene if the levi gives him a present, if the kone gives him a present, right? Yet the sugya doesn't seem like it's also Kelev Shamakna. It seems like it's only Kelev Shamakna. The tirtza devade mikara de milsa exeris hakasuvi bein rab bein levi kintana b'samo kol kachad v'chad yoyev tamak tzas lukra. So wow, the Ritva finds himself in a corner ad kadei kach that he basically says that the Gemara is scrambling for some sort of an explanation. But really, it's Xeris HaKasuv. And these explanations are not, they don't really fully capture the idea. Umiyolo polikra bin Adam Kashuv, the Shein HaKasuv, ubeina namikela, right? And it shouldn't be Peros, and so on. Okay, so what's really going on here, if we accept the critique of the of the Ritva, right, for Levi, we don't understand it so well. And we still had a problem with Rav, even though we paskin like Rav. Before we get to the answer, or what I'm going to suggest as a perspective, there was a question, which I pushed
up. Thank you. Just to extend what I was thinking about the Ritva asked, but to extend it to what we learned several years ago in Kedushin of Vava Medeis, that the question about Chalipin is not good by Kedushin. According to this, right. If I hear Anah, then Chalipin for sure should be good by the woman's
that's
getting
a great, that's a great point. I guess we'll see Kedushin by Kedushin, although I think.
No, but especially if you're ending the Ritva.
No, I understand. So I think it's a really good question. I think it depends a little bit on how you understand the Gemara, the next Gemara that we're going to look at about Kiddushin, where the Gemara says, you know, Kivin Disnai, Bokas Bishar Bruta. So if it's more like a Gnai, well, I'll get to it in a second. I hear the question. It's a good question. But I think there's an answer to the question, but I do agree that, you know, if you take the Gemara Kapshuto, then the question's even, you know, is a little stronger. I still think there's an answer, but we'll get to that. Okay. So what do I think is really going on here? So I think what the Gemara, both for Rav and Levi, is goes back to this perspective that Reb Chaim, you know, kind of put his finger on about Kinyan Sudar. I don't know if he applied it to Rav and Levi, but it certainly makes sense that he did, that he might have. And that is as follows. What we were saying was Kinyan Sudar is not, at least according to the Rambam, let's say, again, we'll see there are different Lishonis and the Rishonim, but according to this Mahalach, we'll call it, Kinyan Sudar is not an exchange. Not really. It's a way, it's a unique Kinyan, in a way a universal Kinyan, in a way the most basic Kinyan that you could have, with saying all of that and saying the most ubiquitous Kinyan, and still a unique Kinyan, in that, as I said, the focus is not on the Maisa Kinyan, as Reb Chaim put it, but on the Das HaMeschayim, on the commitment. So maybe what the Gemara in both cases is saying is as follows. So this is me trying my hand, you know, at this Gemara according to this perspective. The reason that the Gemara is so verbose, you know, for Rav, whose Shita is standard, of course it should be Kelel Shel Kona. The Kona is receiving a karka or a watch, you know. So of course he should be the one giving, you know, the pen or the sudar. So what do you need such a long, you know, drawn out explanation? Nichale kiheicha de nicha lamakne, you know, the gomer maknile. Just say he wants to receive, he's got to give. The answer is it isn't about giving and receiving. It's not about exchange. It's not even a symbolic exchange. Of course, the values aren't anywhere near each other. But it's not even that. He doesn't even keep it, likely. He may not be allowed to keep it. That's a debate in the Gemara. What's really going on is we want to establish, and this, here, the reason I'm doing this now is ostensibly because I'm trying to explain why, you know, Kinyan Devarim, if there was going to be, it would have to be, the best it would be Kinyan Sudar. And why, if it is, to some extent, it's Kinyan Sudar. Why? Because in a way, what we're really saying is that every Kinyan Sudar in something which is immediate and Kinyanable is a kind of Kinyan Devarim, but just the one that works. When it's working through the objectification of your Das, your agreement, you know, not just your intention, not just your assertion, not just your promise, but actually your legal commitment, but with the added proviso, your legal commitment is changing the title and the status, even in the present. Right? But it's the agreement and the commitment that does that. But in order to, what is it that lifts something from being a legal commitment and agreement as opposed to simply being a promise? So I think both Rav and Levi were suggesting strategies to accomplish that very subtle goal. And what Rav was saying the following, it's not that, oh, you're getting a field and you're giving symbolically a handkerchief. Rather, you have to provide a legal framework, a Kenyan type framework, to elevate the das from being simply a promise to being a legal transaction through your commitment. The way that you do that is you start off by establishing a framework of Kenyan. So I take my pen or I take my sudar and I give it to you. And that creates a kind of reciprocal, even though it's very, you know, insignificant, it's minuscule, right? It barely registers. But what I'm doing is I am providing, what's important about it is I'm establishing that what we're doing here is not just an agreement and a promise, even an intense promise, but I'm giving it a legal character, the character of a legal commitment and promise. And that's what I think the words mean. If we go back for a minute to, and where was it? Like Gemara in Bava Metzia. One second. Where is it? Page 2, right? 2?
Page 226.
226. Thank you. Oh, here it is. Okay. So this is what the words mean. Rav Omer B'Kelev Shokona. D'nichale l'kona. D'lahavale makne kona. K'heche d'ligmar v'liknile. If I can make the makne into a kone, even though it's on another transaction, but if it's a connected transaction, then his hakna to me isn't just devarim, it's really kinyan. Now, I should have, but didn't, put down the language of the Rimigash. In the Shita Mukubetzis in Bava Metzia, the Rimigash tries to explain this lengthy language. He doesn't say exactly what I said, but he comes very, very close. What he says is very close to it. I shouldn't say he comes very close to what I say. That sounds arrogant. But what I'm saying is the opposite. Let's say he speaks very verbosely, and I believe that he's saying something very close to what I'm trying to say. Or what I'm trying to say is very close to what he's intention was. Namely, not that you are exchanging one thing for another, but by initiating a kinyan relationship with the makna's agreement becomes a legal commitment and not just a promise. Okay? Similarly, I think that's the pshat in Levi. What's the hayana? Oh, let me explain first what I'm saying, and then I'll. I think it's the same shot in Levi, just that in Rav it's a kind of a boomerang effect, namely, I give him something, you know, and therefore when he gives me something, even though we're not exchanging, you know, but that somehow creates a framework which makes all this a kinyan and not just devarim. And Levi said, no, that isn't how it works. It's true, you need to create a commit. You need to create a framework which is kinyan and not just devarim. But the way to do that is all one-sided. You want to make sure that the makne is in a makne mode. So it's not the boomerang. It's the makne mode. How do you get somebody in a makne mode? First, he gives you a pen. Right? And in that framework of being makne, you know, not just being mischayev or medaber or nishba or whatever you want to say, or masur, you know, to something, in that framework of being makne, the next makne of the karka works. I watch the hana. Hana is a mitzare. We find this many, many Gemaras that, you know, I'll give you one example, the famous one. You know, we say, you know, Hamas Asik, you know, Bechalavim, Ubarayas is Kayev, right? Shekein Nana. Right? Normally, Hamas Asik is not considered Maisavera, or at least it's not Mechayev a Karban, right? An Onesh. But when it comes to Chalavim Varayos, Misasek is Chay. So the Gemara says, why? Shekeinena. So there are two ways to explain that, right? One way, 2 days in Tosis and Shabbos and Sanhedrin. So one way to explain it is the Mechayev is the Hano itself. Forget about the Maisa. Maisa is Misasek, but being Nena, be Iser, is also an Aveira. Whether it's in Arayos or in Machos Asuros, right? That's not what I'm interested in today. The other pshat is, the problem with Misasek is that it's not Mitzuruf to you, because you did it unwittingly or inadvertently. You're doing A and you end up doing B. So B, it's not sufficiently connected or associated with you. How do we get B to be associated with you? Right? The answer is, that's the pshat. If you're misasek, but you're nana, the fact that you're nana is a mitzarif. So what we're saying is, what connects, I gave you a pen. I gave you a handkerchief. And now that means that there's a Kinyan framework, not just a Dibor framework, for B to, through my will, through my commitment, through my das alone, to be makna you a watch or a field. There are two different transactions. What is one transaction to the other? The Hana is a mitzari. We already have a relationship. If I feel Hana by the fact that you're Makabel, right? And now I go to stage two and I see stage one as an introduction to stage two. That provides a Kinyan kind of flavor, right? As opposed to simply a promise to this Hakno. So I think that both, now we don't paskin like Levi, we paskin like Rav. But I think in the end of the day, the discussion, mid Levi Nishmal Rav, and mid the language of Rav Nishmal Levi, and I think that the whole idea of Kinyan Sudar is really expressed in this Gemara. So there's more. I see my time is up, so we'll have to take another 10 minutes next time just to finish this up before we talk about the Chazaka part and the Shutfas part, and then we'll move on after that to Mechiras Batei Knesios and Gimel Beis, interesting stuff. Before I do, let me just ask for questions, and then I'll finish with this Mirat Hashem the first few minutes next time. Ari, you had a question?
Just quickly, I guess we're saying that the most ubiquitous Kinyan, the most generic Kinyan, I think as Rebbe sometimes used, is the Kinyan that in some ways is the most different from all the other Kinyanim because it's relying most, almost exclusively on Das and neither of the other mechanisms that you'll find in every other Kinyan, including Maos itself, which is the most, according to the Ramban, Svaradik.
Svaradik, but it's still quid pro quo.
Yeah, right, meaning a Kinyan.
In a way, Maos is the most quid pro quo.
Right.
Aside from a real exchange, a bargain.
In other words, a Kinyan is usually traditionally understood. And I know Rebbe sees Sefer Kinyan as more of a commitment of obligations. But now we've gotten to the spectrum where it's about barter. It's about moving an object, a changing of legal title. And now we're saying that the Kinyan that doesn't do that at all, that only relies on a person's das, is the most generic and ubiquitous of it. That's, I guess it's hard to, maybe it's just a language point, or it's just hard to understand that sort of dichotomy, that a Kinyan is about exchanging, bartering, values, legal titles, and a Kinyan Suder does absolutely none of those except wanting.
No, it does change title. It changes title through commitment. Right.
Through Das, which is the opposite of all the things that need to happen in the Kinyan. Not the opposite.
It's just that usually, look, put it this way. Ratzon is insufficient without the heavy lifting of the symbolic Maisa Kinyan to accomplish that. Now within, what exactly the relationship is between how much we'll call it Ratzon part and how much the Maisa Kinyan part, is it mostly Maisa Kinyan, but it should be Ratzon, it shouldn't be Misasek? Or is it, it's Ratzon, but it's, more concretized because not only are you objectifying it, by doing something or by connecting it to a framework of Kenyan, but you are also like acting out symbolically, each in its own, each according to its own mode of Kenyan, whether it's, you know, Chazaka or Mashiach or Agba or et cetera, et cetera. But you're also like doing that. So that makes a statement in its own right. So exactly how those things, like how much, you know, weight of each of these different components, that's always like an open issue and question. But I'm saying is there can be one Kenyan, and it's I mean, you're pointing to something which is totally true, which is there's a certain interesting, almost not a paradox, but like a dialectic at least. And that is that, you know, Kenyan Sudar in one respect is the most unusual of Kenyanim in that, and it's like the most rule breaking of Kenyanim, mm-hmm. in the sense that, you know, the whole point is that an agreement is not enough and a commitment's not enough. You have to, you know, do something, whether it's value or symbol, you know, that's the Chiddush of the Torah of Kenyanim, that you have to do that. And in that respect, you're saying Kenyan Sudar is the most rule breaking, you know, the
left of those.
And I think that's true. So how could it be both rule breaking and also, when I say it's ubiquitous, you know, and it's generic, you know.
I think it's those words that make it hard.
It's a little paradoxical, but it's still not contradictory. And the reason is because in every Kenyan anyway, you know, on a certain level, I guess you would say that, you know, the Maisa Kenyan, even if it does the heavy lifting in a typical Kenyan, it is because it concretizes that agreement. It's just the external concretization of it ends up being like, you know, very consequential. And the fact that you could skip that step or replace it by a greater, you know, and more intense, you know, you used to joke when we were little kids, you know, like Reb Chaim's Das, or, you know, like, you know, have to furrow your brow more, you know, like, you know, concentrate more. So, you know, there's something to it. But what I'm saying is it's a little bit, it lessens the irony or the paradox a little to understand that, of course, you know, it's not like magic. You know, like, you know, boom, boom, you do a Mashiach, you do a Hagbah, you know, just it can't be Masasik. Of course it can't be Masasik, but it's more than that.
I was going to ask about Chatzar HaKona Shel Midas, which may be a total separate topic, but, you know, when we say that, you know, a person could be Kona, then a Chatzar, even maybe without Das, how that would factor in.
Right, again, because it's in the, because again, objectively, it's in the...
Is that just the extreme, other extreme, where the Maisa is just so... Muchach, that you could never, that your, the lack of das is unable to change anything. Is that what we would say?
Right, exactly.
Okay. So it's just that.
So I think it's a great point that you're making. I just think it's right. And the ironies are for sure there. But I think it's still true. Yeah. Anyway, so we'll do a little more. I said I was going to do Kedushin Dav Gimel for Dr. Maybrook. It's actually on the list here. It was on the first, I think it's the first Mar Makom on the list. So I want to get to that, and I want to talk about why Kenyan Sudar doesn't need an explicit request to write a shtar. Kenyan Bifnei Shamayim Ein Tzar Klal Mitzvah, which brings us to some Gemaras and Chazakas about him. So I want to talk about a few more things about Kenyan Sudar just to solidify this idea. And then I want to go back to Rav Ashi, the Chazaka part, you know, which was asked about also. And the Shutfus part. So, and then after that, we'll move on and move more quickly to some other interesting topics, you know, going forward. Okay. So, wish you all a good week, and, you know, look forward to picking up next week. Mir Tashem.